Hey, a very good morning. Welcome back in. Hollywood and Omar Kelly in for Joe and Zach. And joining us now on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now is Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Mike, good morning.
How are you guys?
We are good. Mike, we got to get into this Jameis Winston thing right off the bat here. Comes out, and I guess the Bucs released a statement yesterday that had Jameis apologizing to the Uber driver, but it didn't really say what he was apologizing for. He just kind of apologized. Is this some kind of weird, like, admission of guilt here? What's going on with Jameis Winston?
I think this entire thing was a very carefully negotiated and expertly constructed effort to resolve the suspension on a win-win basis for the NFL and for Jameis Winston. The NFL avoids another 2 months of appeals, legal fights like we saw last year with Ezekiel Elliott, where even though the NFL ultimately won and Elliott served the suspension, the NFL was exposed as having Keystone Cop investigations, kangaroo court procedures. It made the NFL look horrible. There's so much of a focus now about getting back to football. They don't want these sideshows. They don't want these fights that makes the NFL look bad. So the NFL benefits by cutting its base suspension from 6 to 3. Winston gets to very carefully construct exactly how this all comes out. He announces the suspension before the league does. The league doesn't release the letter to him explaining what he exactly did. It's all very vague. It feels incomplete. And I think the league at some level realizes in this Me Too era that if you put a 6-page letter out there like you did a year ago with Ezekiel Elliott that talks about what Winston actually did, that 3-game suspension may become a de facto end of his career. And I think that's one of the reasons why the NFL agreed to do it, because now the court of public opinion is a lot more powerful than the court of Roger Goodell.
Well, Mike, I mean, let me ask you this. You know, Jameis Winston, of course, is very popular down here as well because all the FSU people. Is he done if you know, something else happens off the field? Because I don't know how many more times this guy can screw up and still, you know, kind of get past here.
I think one of the reasons the NFL agreed to go along with this is they're confident that he is finally seeing the light. He's going to stay out of trouble. And I think he realizes, and the league realizes, if he steps on the wrong side of the line one more time, it is going to be over for him. And we'll just see if he can conform his behavior to what the NFL expects, what society expects going forward. I mean, the thing that astounds me about this, he committed this act. He groped this Uber driver while the civil lawsuit filed against him by Erica Kinsman was still pending. That's how dumb this guy is. Or it's more than dumb. There's a problem there. Keyshawn Johnson recently suggested there's some sort of a mental problem, and obviously it's impossible for lay people to diagnose that, but something's not right when you have somebody who has every reason to stay on the right side of the line just jumping over to the wrong side of it.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk is here with us. Mike, I mean, here's the thing, though, and Roger Goodell gets ripped more than any other commissioner, obviously, but shouldn't he try to have some sort of consistency? Isn't that important when you're punishing guys to have some sort of consistency so that you know what the rules are? Because it seems like every time they approach something in the NFL, it's with a different, you know, case every single time. They have no consistency.
Well, that's right, and it's a matter of bad optics. And when you look at Tom Brady getting 4 games for whatever it is that he did, I still think at best the evidence was inconclusive. You look at Ezekiel Elliott getting 6 games, period. No matter what, there was no real effort or ability to negotiate that down to anything less than 6 games. You see guys getting thrown out of the league indefinitely with the ability to apply for reinstatement after a year for smoking marijuana. They're just kind of all over the place. That's the sense that's been created by Roger Goodell's NFL. And I think that, I don't know if they hoped that people wouldn't put 2 and 2 together and realize they did a deal with Jameis Winston. I really don't know why they would do a deal, because this Roger Goodell's NFL doesn't typically do deals with players. But to get back to what I said earlier, I think at some level they recognize in this era, if you put that letter out there that was sent to Jameis Winston, there's a good chance that there's a groundswell of public opinion that forces the Buccaneers to cut him and maybe makes him radioactive for the other 31 teams.
Mike, one of your managing editor, Michael David Smith, put out a very great tweet out that's been retweeted 14,000 times, including myself. One game for Josh Brown, repeated terrorizing his ex-wife. Three games for Jameis Winston, sexual assault of an Uber driver. Four games for Tom Brady for Deflategate. 16 games for Martavis Bryant for using marijuana. Do you think that the NFL has a problem in terms of the inconsistency in disparity of these punishments?
Oh, absolutely. And look, they'll say, well, this is everything that we're entitled to do under the collective bargaining agreement. And at some point, you got to set aside the CBA and you got to ask yourself, what's right for the sport? What's right for the players? Is it smart to have guys like Martavis Bryant, Josh Gordon, Justin Blackmon? Remember him? He quit trying to get back in 4 years ago. Talented players who could make the sport better, who could make it more exciting, make it more intriguing. Guys who are just arbitrarily thrown out of the league because, God forbid, they smoke marijuana. And the other suspensions in comparison, there is this sense that it's all over the map. The NFL does whatever it wants, whenever it wants, however it wants. And how dare you expect the NFL to explain itself? They don't want anybody to ask tough questions. They just want to be able to do what they want to do with no consequence. And I think people got fed up with that. For me, it started 6 years ago with the bounty scandal. That was the first time I realized that the NFL isn't as buttoned up as they want us to think they are. And I've always been willing to poke behind the surface of what they tell us and what they think a punishment should be and just say, come on, guys, are you really helping the sport by treating your workforce, the guys who make the sport what it is, this way?
Now, you've got a story up on Pro Football Talk about Jay Ajayi's and his decision to fire his agent and get a new agent. Do you think, a lot of people don't realize that part of the reason that the Dolphins did trade Jay Ajayi was because they knew that there was going to be a nasty pending negotiation for a new contract because he was pushing for it last year. Do you think that that's going to help Jay Ajayi in his crusade to be paid like a top NFL back?
Well, the timing's unusual because if you're Jay Ajayi, what have you done in Philadelphia to get the kind of money that you probably want? I'd say not nearly enough yet. He only had 7 regular season appearances last year. He wasn't spectacular in the postseason. He was good. He wasn't great. He's got to go out this year and have the kind of season that puts the Eagles in the Le'Veon Bell dilemma where, the franchise tag for running backs is so much greater than the market for veteran running backs who become free agents, that I think that's his best play, have a huge season, and then either hit the market or get the $12, $13 million franchise tag. So I don't know what he wants right now, but I don't know what the Eagles would even do for him. I think this is a play that has to wait until after the season, and it hinges upon him playing in 2018 like he did in 2016, specifically when he had those 3 200-yard games. He plays like that, and then the Eagles aren't going to have a choice but to pay him.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk here with us. Mike, it's that time of the year. It's a little bit of a dead period here, and everyone's coming out with their list of the best quarterbacks, the best coaches, the best rosters, all that kind of stuff. Omar has a best quarterback list on SunSentinel.com, so I'll let him get to that in a second. But we were talking about the best roster earlier in the week, the best roster on paper right now going into the season. If you had to pick a team, who would it be?
Well, it's hard to pick one which is good for the season because there really isn't a team that stands out. It's hard not to give the defending champions credit, especially when their best quarterback by far wasn't involved in the playoff run, and he's going to be presumably available and definitely motivated to earn the Super Bowl ring that he would get if they get their next one. But there just isn't a sense out there that the Eagles are destined to repeat. There hasn't been a back-to-back champion since the 2003-04 Patriots. The Eagles had never won a Super Bowl. The idea that all of a sudden they're going to win their second one, I think people just don't buy it. But I'd say that given what they did last year, given the coaching staff, even though they had some changes, that's a pretty potent roster. The Saints, I think, are a team that we had look at all the injuries last year and look how well they still did. If they can stay healthy, the Saints are a team that we had some buzz about late in the year that, hey, this could be a Super Bowl contender in 2018, and we've kind of forgotten about them. But I'd say the Saints are a team to be reckoned with. A lot of teams in the NFC have very good rosters. But I think people are going to sleep on the Eagles. If you're the Eagles, you probably like it that way.
Now, he just teased my QB rankings. I ranked all 32 starting quarterbacks, including the three teams, which I called the either-or teams. But Ryan Tannehill falls into my unproven category. I separated the quarterbacks into four categories. Unproven happens to be one of them. Patrick Mahomes, Mitch Trubisky, Blake Bortles, Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Tyrod Taylor, Ryan Tannehill, and then Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you feel like that's fair company for Ryan Tannehill in terms of a quarterback who still really hasn't shown you who he is?
Yeah, and it's amazing. The guy's been around since 2012, and I think at a certain point, if he hasn't shown us who he is, maybe he has, right?
Yeah.
You either become a great quarterback or you become a clipboard holder, which there's no shame in that. You make $3-4 million a year to just be available to play. And I think this is the year that Ryan Tannehill either becomes the guy who is a consistent starter who gets into the top half of the league or close to it, or he's a guy who's destined to be someone's backup for the next 6 or 7 years.
Now, obviously, Ryan's making a lot of money. Next year is kind of an opt-in year for the team, $18.5 million. That's not bad money for starting quarterbacks, but let's just say the Dolphins do decide to move on from him if he has an average year. What do you think the market would be for a free agent Ryan Tannehill?
Well, you know, it depends on who else is available. This past year, there were a lot of free agent quarterbacks, and I think it would have been a bad year for Ryan Tannehill to be out there because teams had plenty of other options. So, you're right. $18 million sounds like a lot of money on paper, and it is. But when you can consider that the top of the market's now 30, like, is that really all that out of whack when Ryan Tannehill is hovering right around, 60% of the market? Top of the market value. So I it all depends on whether or not somebody sees him as a starter. I mean, people thought AJ McCarron would get decent money on the market this year, but when the music stopped, there was one potential starting quarterback left and there were no starting quarterback jobs. And so, he's the guy who's holding the spot in Buffalo and who knows how long he'll hold it, and he's not making very much money to do it. So, Tannehill could find himself in a numbers game next year if the Dolphins do cut him.
Now, we're sitting here on the verge of LeBron sweepstakes, and you clearly watch the NBA just because you have to. Looking at the leverage that NBA players have where they can even force trades before they become free agents like Kawhi Leonard is doing, do you think that the NFLPA looks at what's going on in that league and says, based on what's upcoming in their new CBA negotiations, that we have to help players get more control and power?
Well, in the abstract, yes, but the question becomes, what do you have to give up out of the current status quo to get players more power? And will the NFL even negotiate that? I mean, what price tag does the NFL put on giving players greater mobility? I think the one thing most players would like to get rid of is the franchise tag.
Yeah.
But would the NFL ever get rid of the franchise tag? So that thing's been there ever since true free agency with the asterisk of the franchise tag has been around. So I think it all comes down to when you go into the room and you're sitting across the table, what you want is one thing. What you have to give up to get what you want is something else. And there's that push and pull, that back and forth. And I think it's always going to be difficult unless the players have real leverage. We've talked about this before. Are they willing to miss game checks? Are they willing to strike? Are they willing to shut the union down in the face of a lockout and file an antitrust lawsuit and let it play all the way out and collect the damages that would come from a full season of being illegally locked out? Until they're willing to do something like that, it's going to be very difficult to make dramatic gains at the bargaining table.
Now, Mike, if you were D'Amore Smith, what would be the one non-negotiable for you in terms of something that you're trying to gain in the next CBA deal?
The non-negotiable would continue to be expanding the regular season. And even though the NFL doesn't talk much about that anymore, I guarantee you the NFL is very interested in more regular season games, especially now that gambling is going to be available in as many states as want to pass it. I think that is still looming. They're hoping that the NFLPA will offer it up on their own. They're hoping the NFLPA will realize that they can make a lot more money. And I would continue to call that non-negotiable, because when you finally do agree to it, I'm not saying it's non-negotiable permanently. I'm saying you enter these negotiations with that being non-negotiable, because I think that's the one thing that the NFLPA can use to get the most back that they possibly could during bargaining.
Now, would you give up the franchise tag for turning 18 regular season games to exhibition games?
Well, if that's the only way ownership's going to get it, and the NFLPA can sell it, and they've done a good job over the past 5 years of shouting down this idea of having extra regular season games, maybe ownership would. I think once ownership realizes how much more money can be made, not just on TV, because it was always about adding 2 weekends of national television. It's more now when you consider how many different ways they're going to make money off of gambling, especially during games, people making bets per play, per drive, per quarter, per whatever. And who knows? Maybe the franchise tag does go out the window if the owners decide there's just too much money in those extra 2 weeks.
He's Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com. Joins us every Friday here on WQAM. Mike, thanks for taking the time.
All right, see you guys.